The daily podcast of The Exchange is supported by Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. More information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today is author Helen Thorpe, whose first book, Just Like Us, won praise for its use of personal narrative to explore the immigration debate. Just Like Us is the true story of four Mexican girls in Colorado and how their immigration status affects their lives and their friendship. Now in her new book, Thorpe uses the same technique to navigate a very different subject, women in the military. The book is called Soldier Girls. It's the tale of three female Indiana National Guard members who served in Afghanistan and Iraq. All had very different reasons for signing up with the Guard. One did it on a dare, for example, but none expected to be serving in a war zone on the other side of the globe. Thorpe presents a deeply personal portrait of these women. There's a lot of broken hearts, family drama, and heavy drinking, for example. But through these stories, she also addresses issues that often make news concerning our military. Repeated long deployments, sexual assaults, post-traumatic stress disorder, problems in the veterans' health system, and the ongoing debate over the role of women in the armed forces. Today in The Exchange, Helen Thorpe joins us, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Helen joins us from Denver, Colorado. And Helen, it's great to have you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, right on the book jacket of your book, Helen, it says women served in the armed forces in Iraq and Afghanistan in unprecedented numbers. What's behind that, and what's been the impact on the military?
So over the course of the last decade, you saw numbers of women in all branches of the military inching upwards. And one of the most significant draws was the lure of college tuition, as I'm sure you've reported on and your listeners will probably be aware. And the youngest character that I write about, the youngest woman in my book, is exactly that type of individual. She's a young woman who signed up because she really could not figure out how to pay for college. So she enlisted in March 2001. She was 18. Her parents had split up when she was very young. Neither had saved any money for college. Her dad drove a truck. Her mom did factory jobs, and this was in Indiana. And recruiters had, of course, come to her high school. She had heard them talk about the different options, and she thought signing up for the National Guard would work well for her. She was very left-leaning. She had voted for Ralph Nader in the preceding presidential election in 2000. She didn't think of herself as somebody who would otherwise join the military, but college tuition was her single sole reason to enlist. And I think that's characteristic of a large number of young people who joined at the time that she did, which is to say before the conflicts began, and you know, who enlisted in the National Guard really for that college tuition benefit. And I know that that was, in her Guard unit, the main reason that so many other young women joined the Guard unit in that period of time.
Yeah, that's one thing that jumps out from this book is all three of these women enlisted prior to 9/11 and never expected to be in places like Iraq or Afghanistan. They might not have even, you know, known where those places were.
Right. And that, to me, was what fascinated me about their lives. They had made a commitment. They wanted to honor their commitment. But in their minds, that commitment had been very, very, very different than what actually happened. And then they tried to honor the commitment anyway. But in the case of Desma's close friend, in the case of Michelle's close friend, Desma Brooks, they ended up sharing a tent in Afghanistan and really becoming lifelong friends. Desma was a single mother with three children, and she thought serving in the National Guard made sense for her pre-9/11. She had been married. She got divorced, but she still stayed in the Guard. She still loved the camaraderie. She was very, very good at her work. She was an automated logistics specialist. She was tracking maintenance on vehicles using the military software. So But she had never envisioned doing 2-year-long deployments and leaving her 3 young children who were still in elementary school, and then her oldest was in middle school. She had never envisioned them leaving them two different times for a full year. So the commitment became entirely different than what they had originally thought.
Well, and this influx of women in the military, I mean, with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan after 9/11, the military, you know, needed lots of people. And so, as you said, women came in large numbers. How ready do you think the U.S. military was for this large influx of females?
So I think, as you're describing, you know, I think the military was looking to keep the services all volunteer. They did never, you know, throughout the entirety of the decade, you saw them not ever wanting to have a draft. And in an all-volunteer situation, as you're describing, of course, they're trying to figure out how can they get more people to serve. And, you know, with the women's movement happening in the 60s and 70s, those two things in conjunction, I think, contributed as well to the military recruiting larger and larger numbers of women. You know, I think certain branches of the military have worked really hard to figure out how to incorporate women and how to solve some of the issues that came up. But what I was looking at was particularly women in the National Guard in this one unit out of Indiana. And I think some of the issues that came up were sort of unexpected and to the leaders of that particular unit. They did not anticipate dealing with things like infidelity and marriages breaking up. And it just was not what they had bargained for, because they didn't see these very lengthy multiple deployments coming, particularly for the National Guard. So I think they were a little bit blindsided by some of what ended up happening in the post-9/11 reality. And women were just a big part of that reality. And in the situation that I was describing in my book, you had 3 women who were just always struggling to hold on to a solid relationship. And almost every time a deployment began, they wound up losing a relationship that they were trying to hold on to at home. And then they would start a new relationship while deployed. And then you saw them trying desperately to hang on to that relationship as they came home. But often the deployment-related relationship couldn't sustain during the transition back home. There is one woman in the book, Debbie Helton, out of the 3, who actually holds on to one single relationship across the entirety of the book, which covers, you know, 12 years in their lives. And Debbie had a very, very solid, supportive partnership with a boyfriend. She had been married before twice. She did not want to get married again. She had made this clear to this guy. And he said, well, I will support you anyway. And he was caring for her animals while she was gone. He was living in her home. He was supporting her with phone calls and emails and letters. And they ended up becoming so close as a result of his incredible support during the first deployment that she did, that when she got home, she ended up proposing to him.
Oh, my goodness.
And they did get married, largely as a result of how that difficulty and challenge transformed their relationship into an even deeper one.
All right. Well, let me invite our listeners to join us, and then I have a lot more questions for you, Helen. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest is Helen Thorpe. Her new book is called Soldier Girls, The Battles of 3 Women at Home and at War. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. If you've served in the military, and especially in the National Guard, what's your take on the experiences of women in the armed forces? And by the way, guys, we want to hear from you too. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter, find us there. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Just a quick point of clarification, Helen, because some people don't understand this. The National Guard, how is that different from the regular military? There's certain roles that they do and that they don't do.
So when these 3 women enlisted in the National Guard, Michelle, Desma, and Debbie, they all signed up understanding they were going to put on the uniform and drill 1 weekend a month and then 2 weeks every summer they'd be doing annual training. So they essentially had civilian lives for all the rest of the days in the year. And they were anticipating always maintaining their civilian lives primarily and then having a military life only during an emergency as needed. And in their minds, they had always envisioned that being a short-term emergency like a flood or a fire, tornado. So the idea of being deployed for a full year to a foreign country multiple times just never occurred to any one of them. They reacted very differently when that did happen. And one of the things I love about these three women is how different they are from each other and yet how close they are. So the three of them, there's 30 years difference in age from youngest to oldest, and there's that much spread in their political beliefs and their feelings about what happened in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So you see the oldest of the three, Debbie Helton, feels that the two wars are justified. She supports both wars completely, and she feels that being deployed is the highlight of her life. It's the most fulfilling thing she's ever, ever done. And she's trying to mother and help this very young woman, Michelle, who has the opposite feeling. She had voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. You see her vote for Nader again in 2004 while she's in Afghanistan. She doesn't believe in either of the wars. And then Desma is the single mom with three children. She had voted for Bush in 2000. She supported the war in Afghanistan. But the war in Iraq, she's not sure about, feels like a stretch. She's not sure the military can fight two wars at the same time and do a good job in both arenas. So she's very skeptical about the second war. And these three women are debating and discussing these subjects as they're, you know, trying to accommodate the deployments when they had never structured their lives anticipating something like that happening.
Well, and just to clarify, so National Guard, in general, male and female, they're supposed to fulfill more of a support role, right, Helen? Not a direct combat role.
That's what they had envisioned. And, you know, over the course of the decade, and some of this material is included in the book because it was all being written about in this newsletter that they were reading during their deployments, you know, the people at the very top of the National Guard are saying, we're not sure we were structured for this. You know, we envisioned always playing a support role, and we seem to be being used more like a branch of the regular army that's available all the time, and we didn't really, that's not how we're envisioning things.
And that happens with one of the characters, Desma, and something pretty terrible happens to her. We'll hear more in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with Helen Thorpe. She's a Colorado-based journalist and author. Her new book is called Soldier Girls, The Battles of Three Women at Home and at War. It follows the stories of three Indiana National Guard members, their deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, and their struggles once they got back home. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Helen, a Facebook comment came in from Jillian. She says she's curious to know why you chose the word girls in the title of the book when it's about grown women. Does this word give them the respect they deserve? Jillian, it's a valid point. Thank you. Go ahead, Helen.
I love that she raised this issue and is asking this question. So the title comes from a recruiting T-shirt that the Guard was using during the years that they were serving. And so while they were in Afghanistan, back in the United States, some parts of the Guard had started handing out, you know, swag for people who were enlisting. And there was a paragraph in their newsletter that they were all reading that was describing the Guard using hunting licenses and pink T-shirts that said Soldier Girl as gifts, enticements, you know, when somebody would sign up.
So it was a recruiting tool.
Yes, exactly. And they thought it was kind of funny, and they also noticed that the word girl was being used in this way. And so the title is a reference to the you know, the old phrase soldier boys or soldier boy. And it's trying to get at the difference in having women through references to both to that pop culture song, but also this recruiting T-shirt. And it's meant to be a little ironic, but I hope it's not viewed as putting these women down in any way. They're amazingly strong and capable and incredibly intelligent and articulate. And one of the strengths, I think, of the book is how well the reader gets to know these women because they shared so much material where they get to speak in their own voices. So Michelle was writing letters home the whole time she was in Afghanistan to both her father and to a boyfriend. And her father and her boyfriend kept every one of those letters and were able to share them with me. And then Debbie, meanwhile, had kept 6 diaries across her 2 deployments, first to Afghanistan and later to Iraq. And Desma was writing emails home to her children. And through all of these letters and emails, they even kept Facebook posts. Desma ended up turning over her entire medical record with all the doctor's notes and therapy notes. And you get to hear them describe in real time as things are happening to people they love and care about, or in Desma's case, to a therapist, in their own words, what the experience feels like. And that I think they come across loud and clear as very capable women, and nobody would put them down, I don't think.
Well, Jillian, thanks a lot for the Facebook comment. Clearly something that Helen thought about in writing the title of the book. Again, the book is called Soldier Girls, The Battles of Three Women at Home and at War. You can join us if you've served in the military, and especially the National Guard, where these women served. What's your take on the unique experience of women in the armed forces? This book highlights so many of the issues that come up with the military, from the stress of repeated deployments to sexual assault to PTSD. We'd love to hear your stories and your questions at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And I did want to ask you a little bit more, Helen, about one woman in particular, Desma. She's the single mom with 3 kids. There are a couple issues that she struggles with that we hear about all the time when it comes to the military. One is the issue of PTSD, the role of the National Guard. She is not in a combat role, but she's driving a supply truck, right? And she hits a bomb, an IED, and what happens?
Yeah. So during her first deployment, she had that relatively safe job that she had at the beginning of her career, tracking maintenance on SAM software, the military software. But you're absolutely right. During her second deployment, she is instead asked to drive a gun truck at the front of a supply convoy. And she's part of the navigation team at the beginning of her Iraq deployment, which has her in the 3rd vehicle in the convoy. But a little bit later, she starts out many convoys in the 2nd vehicle, assistant scout, really looking for roadside bombs. And it's a much, 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 much riskier place to be than where she was during her earlier deployment to Afghanistan, when she was always staying on the military post in Kabul. Here in Iraq, she's out every day that she's doing missions on the highways of Iraq. And you see her witness several other explosions before the day comes when her truck gets too close and hits a homemade tap pressure plate that ignites a bomb very, very close to her truck. And it's a big bomb. Everybody in her vehicle winds up getting very severe concussions. And eventually, over time, she's diagnosed with what doctors will call a mild case of traumatic brain injury. But there's nothing really mild about, you know, her physical symptoms. She has like a migraine-sized headache. It just means it could have been a lot worse, of course. From that point on, she's having to take medication to suppress this very, very fierce headache. And then the medication itself causes her a lot of issues, like very, very severe memory loss. She becomes very irritable. She's having problems with anger at work. She's lashing out at people.
Including her kids. This creates a big family issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And she's having a lot of trouble with PTSD, where she is very hypervigilant. You see this hypervigilance in all kinds of ways when you spend time with Desma. I mean, from spending time with her myself, will see her. She will never get in a vehicle that anybody else is driving. She must be behind the wheel. And she drives as if she's in a convoy all the time. So she's bumper to bumper with the car right in front of her. It's kind of hair-raising.
I was going to say,
civilian.
It's a little nerve-wracking.
Like myself. but she feels that she's in control of the vehicle, and she doesn't want anybody else to be in control because she wants to be able to jerk the wheel, you know, right or left if she sees something along the highway. But she's back in Indiana, you know, and there's not a roadside bomb along the highway that goes off while she's in Indiana. It's just she's reacting as if she's still in Iraq all the time.
Wow. Yeah, and so she, this is another issue we've talked a lot about on this program. She seeks help for this when she gets back home with the veterans healthcare system. And how good a response does she get?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I love and admire about Desma is she is just a fighter. And she, through all of her difficulties, you know, I think her personality shines through that she just doesn't quit. She never gives up. And so she does manage to get from the VA the care that she needs, though she has to lobby for herself pretty intensely to get the doctors to pay attention. You know, they don't at first diagnose traumatic brain injury, so she for a while is not being compensated for that, nor is she really being treated appropriately, and she's managing this fierce headache constantly. But she's just very persistent, and she goes back and back and back, and the doctors do pay attention to her because she is a squeaky wheel. And then she gets the correct diagnosis, and you can see all this in the medical notes that she shared, and you can see the doctor's comments. And it's a great triumph, I think, that she fought for herself and advocated for herself, although it's also easy to imagine somebody not doing that as successfully as she did. She also managed to find therapists who were really helpful in her grappling with the PTSD and the hypervigilance. And you see her work with two different therapists. I thought it was an amazing thing that she would turn over all her therapy notes. The first therapist she works with is very sympathetic and really wants to help Desma, but her idea of how best to help Desma is to go over some childhood trauma when Desma was possibly abused, and Desma just does not want to talk about that. And the reason the therapist wants to go over it is there's the idea that maybe post-traumatic stress is worse or more likely to happen for somebody who has previously experienced trauma, and you might need to treat both the wartime trauma but also the earlier trauma.
Yeah, I've heard that you know, some people get PTSD from a certain event and some don't. And why is that? Go ahead, Helen.
And one explanation for why somebody might be likely to get PTSD could be some earlier trauma. And this therapist is correct in wondering if the earlier trauma could be related. I mean, the literature would suggest the therapist might be correct. But this is not the therapy Desma wants, and she's fighting the therapist all along the way. Later, her first therapist actually has to change jobs. She loses that therapist. She gets a second therapist. And the second therapist has a very different approach and says, okay, earlier trauma, you don't want to talk about it? Fine. Let's deal with today. Let's modify your behavior. And it's really a behavior modification approach. And the therapist is assigning Desma homework, like go sit in Denny's and have your back to the door. And just let people come in behind you. And Desma cannot do it.
And don't jump a mile high when someone opens the door.
She can't sit in the restaurant with her back to the door and not watch who's coming in. And so you see her get these different homework assignments, and the therapist gradually trying to work with her on this hypervigilance. They also go over in incredible detail the day the IED went off, trying to get Desma to be less... she kind of relives the experience anytime she thinks about it, and the therapist is trying to get her to a place where it's not so overwhelming for her to remember it, where she can actually talk about what happened. And they do work really hard on that, and you see Desma make incredible progress.
Well, and PTSD, traumatic brain injury, these are some of the issues that we've talked about in the past on this program that have come up a lot when it comes to the U.S. military, especially these long, repeated deployments. The stories of how three women from the Indiana National Guard experienced these issues and many others is told in the book we're talking about today in the exchange. It's called Soldier Girls, The Battles of Three Women at Home and at War. The author is Helen Thorpe. She's with us this hour, and let's hear from you, too. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 6477. I wanted to ask you about the issue of sexual assault in the military, Helen, because we hear a lot about that in the news. First of all, a couple questions. How do these women talk about that? There's one woman, for example, Michelle, who's young, she's cute, she gets a lot of attention.
Yes, she does. So my book does not deal with military sexual trauma or assault in the military as its main subject. And if people are really, really interested in that topic, I'm sure you've talked about the documentary, The Invisible War, which is an incredible documentary that really has that subject as its main focus. But in the book that I wrote, you see the sexual assault issue always on the horizon. It's just surrounding these women all the time. While they're deployed, none of the three is assaulted by one of their colleagues. But as you mentioned, Michelle is just always attracting attention. And so through the book, you start to understand the atmosphere in which the assaults are taking place. And that atmosphere is one of an incredible, the women being in an incredible minority and a huge degree of male attention surrounding them from the moment they wake up until the moment they go to sleep. And in Michelle's case, because she was so young, she was 21 by the time the Afghanistan deployment happened. She turned 22 overseas that year. And, you know, attractive with long, blonde, curly hair and living on a post where she's in a mixed gender support battalion, but they're right alongside the infantry soldiers that their support battalion supports. And then there's foreign units all around that they're working with who are often all male. And often, you know, she got some of the worst treatment that occurred during that year happened from Romanian soldiers. So it's not always Americans that are paying attention to her in ways that are uncomfortable sometimes.
So NATO and other forces.
Yeah, exactly. So you start to feel this, you know, she can't sit down in the chow hall without, you know, tons of guys she doesn't know, like, wanting to sit with her and converse with her. And some of the comments are friendly, but some of them are, you know, suggestive. And it's just every day, over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
And she kind of ends up sleeping with a guy and taking a boyfriend on in that environment. In her own mind, it's kind of to keep everybody else at bay. And he sort of becomes like her protector, or a way to signal to the other men that she's not available and they can kind of cease and desist, you know, their advances. It's very hard for her to keep some of the the NCOs in her chain of command also away from her. And her immediate boss actually has to say to somebody higher up in the chain of command, look, you can't have her. And I interviewed her immediate boss, and those were his exact words of what he said. He said to the person above him, you cannot have this young woman. So,
wow.
You know, there were people around her trying to keep other people away from her, but she needed help, essentially, fending off the unwanted attention. It was so omnipresent. And in that kind of environment, you can start to understand where women are being viewed as commodity, and they're sort of a scarce commodity, and men are competing over them, and it's a tense environment. There's violence on the horizon all the time. I think you can start to understand how some of these assaults take place. Desma Brooks.
This is the single mom with three kids. She's in the middle of this group age-wise. Yeah, go ahead.
Desma Brooks shares a tent with Michelle during that Afghanistan deployment. And Desma is the one of the three women who does actually say that she was assaulted. But that took place back in Indiana, and it was the military recruiter that signed her up after she enlisted. That person then assaulted her, according to Desma. But she never pressed charges, and so there's no documentary evidence to support what Desma says. It's just her allegation, her word. So, and at the same time, you have Debbie Helton, the oldest of the three women that I'm writing about. And I don't mean to make light of any of this, because it's a very serious issue, but Debbie is looking on at all of the attention that's coming to Michelle, also to Desna, and Debbie is thinking, she's now 52 during the Afghanistan deployment back in 2004. And Debbie's thinking sort of wistfully, it's a long time since anybody's paid me that kind of attention. And you, so through the book, you get kind of a multi-generational perspective on what it's like to be in that atmosphere.
Well, and you talk about Michelle taking on this boyfriend. You know, she's not even that crazy about him, but he's big and she feels protected. And then everybody else leaves her alone.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sex in this book, Helen. Consensual sex. You write that it was not unusual for married people to have, quote unquote, deployment relationships where they're openly seeing each other, even though one or both partners is married to somebody back home. And a couple reviewers have said, whoa, Helen Thorpe, I thought this was about the National Guard. It reads like Peyton Place. You know, what's been your response to that?
You know, I myself was a little surprised, needless to say, when the women started sharing some of the situations that evolved. It was not what I was expecting. And when I first started talking to them, it wasn't even what they were sharing with me. So originally, the motivation for me writing this book, I was very fascinated by their friendships, the way they supported each other, how different they were politically and age-wise, and yet how close. And particularly the story of Desna, as you've already helped me explain, that she's a single mom with three kids doing this epic juggling act. When Desna then went on to say, oh, and I had an affair with somebody above me in the chain of command, and when Michelle was telling me that she had an affair with this guy who was married, though neither Desna nor Michelle were married, I was taken aback. But it was part of the reality that they were dealing with all this attention. I appreciated that they were so open and candid.
And Helen, I'm going to jump in on you there, but I will let you finish up in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with author Helen Thorpe. Her new book is Soldier Girls, The Battles of Three Women at Home and at War. It tracks the stories of three Indiana National Guard members over the decade of war. They served in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the book highlights through their stories so many of the issues that come up all the time regarding our military, from the stress of repeated deployments to sexual assaults in the military to PTSD, traumatic brain injury, the impact on families. All these and many of the issues are told through the stories of these women. We'd love to hear from you this hour. If you have personal experience with this issue, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Helen, just before the break, we were talking about how a couple of people have said, hey, this book reads like, you know, a soap opera, Peyton Place. There's a lot of relationships and bed hopping in this book.
And the point that I wanted to be clear to make is that there's also a lot of debate about whether this is a good thing or not happening within their support battalion. And their support battalion was led by people who, there were a couple individuals in the chain of command who themselves set a tone by being very interested in extramarital affairs. And I think there were other units that where that was not the case, and you see the women serve in other units later where that was not the case, where there wasn't then so much going on. I think that the chain of command can really set a tone or not set a tone that's appropriate in this regard. And they happened to be during their Afghanistan deployment in a unit where this was viewed as something that would be tolerated, that extramarital affairs were going to happen and it was going to be a norm. That was the tone their chain of command set.
Wow, so the tone comes from the top.
And I don't name individuals. You know, I end up writing about relationships if, you know, one of these women tells me I was in a relationship. And so if other people had relationships and they did not share that information with me, I don't I don't name the people who are setting the tone, because I tried reaching out to them and they didn't want to talk to me, and that's fine. That's their business. But for these women, the relationships they did have were a huge part of their emotional experience, and it was often very difficult for them to come home and have the relationship not come home to, not work in the home environment.
Yeah, these deployment relationships.
So they ended up with like a decade of fractured relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a big impact, speaking of their home lives, on kids as well. Yeah. And I'll ask you about that in just a moment, Helen. But let's go to our listeners again. And Madeline's calling from Keene. Hi, Madeline. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hey, thank you. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, well, welcome, Madeline.
I know. It's just one of these things that kind of just touched a chord on me while I was driving and pulled over. And I just, from the perspective of having my father in the military and growing up on Army bases, as I got to be a young lady in high school, just the same kind of experience, you know, walking on base, just constantly being bombarded with offers and that feeling that you get when you're just constantly having dice around you. And there were times that I would get followed and I would just look over my shoulder and then walk over to the MP barracks and just look again over my shoulder and walk in just to kind of let them know, you know, not that I reported anybody. It was just uncomfortable at times. And and we all, you know, all of our, we were all dating GIs. And we were just young, and they were older, and So.
Well, it's good to hear from you, Madeline.
That's kind of all I wanted to say, and just throw that out there. That you know, I don't think I've heard anything in the media that's addressed that issue. So.
Okay, Madeline, thanks
right.
a lot
Thank
for calling
you.
In. I appreciate it. And you talked about this a little bit earlier, Helen, but go back there again if you want. This idea that, you know, especially for Michelle, it gets really uncomfortable. It gets to the point where she's having a hard time, you know, focusing.
Yeah, and you see her during one annual training. There's somebody right above her. She's on the armament team, and there's a sergeant who brings his cot over in the middle of the night to put it right next to her, so that when she wakes up in the morning, his face is just inches away from hers. And he's much, much older than she is, and she just cannot get rid of this guy. He's jumping into foxholes with her when she's meant to be on guard duty, and he's not, and he doesn't really belong in the foxhole. And, you know, it's very, very hard for her to get rid of him. And so I don't mean to laugh, because for her it's a very uncomfortable experience. There is something a little bit funny about it, because he's so much older, and it's just so not going to happen in her mind, and he's yet persisting, but it's extremely uncomfortable for her. And I appreciate the caller pointing out that it can happen to family members too. And I that reminded me of another book that came out right around the same time that mine did. Angie Ricketts, who's married to an officer in the regular Army, and who, like the caller, is living on military bases. So different than the National Guard families that I'm writing about. Angie Ricketts has written a beautiful memoir called No Man's War. And I think her book, because it's written from the perspective of a spouse whose life partner does 8 deployments over that same decade, she's writing about the home front and the toll it's taking at home. And that's a whole other piece of what we're
sure discussing. And I remember a bunch of years ago we did another book with another author who'd also written about the home front, and yeah. That was fascinating. Here's the thing, though, given what our caller says, given Michelle's story, again, you know, the men all over her, is this an argument against men and women serving together? I mean, when women first started serving in large numbers, some people said, look, it's going to be too distracting, it's not going to work, you know, it's going to be Peyton Place. And I'm just wondering if what you think about that.
So in the book, you see this really fascinating moment where Desma is, she bumps into a table on which the company commander in her unit has piled some manila folders, and the folders fall over, and she very interestedly picks up the pieces of paper but is sort of reading them at the same time that she's putting them back. And she notices that the JAG lawyers are sending memos basically asking the same question that you're asking, like, what are we going to do about these affairs? Is this Peyton Place, and how do we, you know, how can we have military discipline if people are picking and choosing which parts of the code to pay attention to? I mean, can they really pick and choose which laws they're going to abide by? It, and if they're flagrantly breaking some of the rules, you know, is there military discipline at all? Which is a totally legitimate question to be asking. But you see really, really different, you see a very different atmosphere when DESMA is in Iraq, and there's a different tone set by the leadership in her unit. In that situation, it's fascinating because she has been transferred into a previously all-male field artillery regiment, and there are not really supposed to be any women at all in the unit she winds up in, but the field artillery regiment is not being deployed in a field artillery capacity. It's being deployed in a support capacity. So women are allowed to serve as fillers for that deployment. And she's the gender ratio is even more skewed than during the time when she was in Afghanistan. When she's in Iraq, out of the 100 people in the company, there's just a handful of women. She's one of just two or three women. And, you know, you would think it would be even worse, and it's not. It's better, and it's because I think the leadership set a different tone.
These are the rules, and you need to follow them.
Right.
And one of the rules is no relationships?
Well, you're not meant to be having a relationship with a subordinate if you are their superior in the chain of command. That's just absolutely
sure.
not allowed.
But what about equals?
Well, if one of them is married or both of them are married to other people, then it's not supposed to be happening. And so, you know, the relationship that Michelle has in Afghanistan and the relationship that DESMA has in Afghanistan, in both cases, they're sleeping with men who are married to women back home. So the men are not meant to be doing that, and DESMA and Michelle are not meant to be having those relationships with the married men either. Plus, in DESMA's case, the other thing that's totally wrong with the picture is that the person she's sleeping with is above her in the chain of command. So in her case, it's forbidden for two different reasons. She feels that the affair was completely consensual. She does not in any way feel that the man she was having a relationship with was abusing his position or forcing her to have sex with him. In fact, she's very funny even when she talks about it, because she's saying the sex was so great that it was like one of the highlights of her time in Afghanistan. So it's very different, I think, her feeling about it than when it's when somebody's using their position of authority to force somebody below them to have sex with them.
But in terms
not
of
saying that happened.
In terms of this broader question, Helen, you know, should men and women serve together in the military? Can they handle it? Can they, you know, keep it clean, so to speak? You're saying the tone comes from the top.
I think it does.
Yeah.
I think that's the experience of the three women that I was writing about, that the situation varied tremendously depending on leadership. And you see also the affairs that take place during their Afghanistan deployment in this sort of lax environment that they were in there, they're making other people very uncomfortable, and that's also described in the book. So in their tent that Michelle and DESMA share, there's a total of 10 women. Michelle and DESMA are two, and there's eight others. Those eight, one or two of them are also having relationships like Michelle and DESMA, but the other women in the tent are really uncomfortable.
Mm, and that's not good for unit cohesiveness and
so forth.
So
there's a lot of friction as a result.
I want to ask you also about one more big, big issue that's come up with the military recently, as experienced by these women, especially the woman in the middle, age-wise, DESMA. She's a single mom. She's got three kids. She does two long deployments, including one very difficult one in Iraq, as you've described. But official military policy is no single parents.
Yeah. So it's fascinating the way DESMA becomes a single parent who deploys. And, of course, marriages don't always last forever. When DESMA first enlisted, she had one child. She had dropped out of high school, gotten pregnant, had a baby out of wedlock, and then she had hidden that fact when she was enlisting. She had not mentioned it to anybody that she had a baby. She realized that was a problem. She understood she was not meant to have a child and be enlisting, a child that she had custody of, and be enlisting at the same time. She wound up deciding to marry her boyfriend. So she got married so that by the time basic training started, she was not a single parent anymore.
She was married.
Right. So she officially enters the guard. She starts basic training and joins the guard. By the time she's drilling with her unit, she is a married person with one child. She goes on to have two more kids with her husband. So they've got three children, and she's married. Then they get a divorce.
So the assumption at first is, okay, she's got three kids, but the husband is not enlisted, so if she has to get deployed, he can take care of them. That's the working assumption. Yeah,
exactly.
Go ahead.
But instead they get divorced. So then she has three children and is a single parent again by the time her first deployment comes around. So she must, to deploy, she cannot have custody of her children. So she has to give custody of them over. And so I asked her, and me as a civilian, I'm always asking these questions that reveal my own ignorance or my lack of understanding. I'm good at asking questions. I don't mind looking like, gosh, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm asking her, well, how does that work? Like, couldn't you just have said, I can't find somebody to take custody of my children, or I don't have good people in my life who are going to watch these kids the way that I would? And couldn't you then not deploy and actually be at home with your children? And might that not be better for your kids? And Desmond looked at me like I was crazy. And her response was, I would be a dirtbag if I did that. That was the word she used. So in her mind, and we talked about this at length, and she makes it abundantly clear in her mind, it was not at all acceptable to even think about not deploying with her unit. Everybody else is going, she's going too. It just, she couldn't even conceive of trying to get out of the deployment. She would have thought of it as weaseling out. You know, there was such...
She couldn't have lived with herself.
Right.
There okay, but here's the other side, though.
Would do that.
So
ahead.
That's before her deployment. Over the deployments that she does, two of them, it's really tough on them. And her son gets into big trouble. I mean, he, you know, robbery, other crimes. He ends up in prison. So I wonder, after the fact, how does she feel about that decision before the fact?
You know, after the fact, she's haunted by this question. And you see her asking herself over and over again after she returns from Iraq and her son has gotten himself in such trouble, did this happen because I did those deployments? Is it because I went to Afghanistan and Iraq and left my children behind two times that my son has wound up in jail and one of my daughters has failed two grades of school? You know, am I responsible for them going off track? She's totally haunted by that question. And she doesn't know the answer because there's no control to the experiment. Like, she did the deployments, but there's no control in which Desma stayed home, and we know what happens if she had stayed home. We don't know. I mean, maybe her son would have wound up in jail anyway. We have no idea. But it sure does seem as though the deployments caused her children a lot of difficulty and played some part in them getting in so much trouble.
You know, last year, Helen, as you were wrapping up these interviews, writing the book, the Pentagon announced expanded roles for women in uniform to integrate women more fully in combat units. How did these three National Guard women react to that news?
It's kind of fascinating that they reacted so differently, each one of them. So Michelle, the youngest, the most liberal of the three, she kind of reacts in a very conservative way, which is she has watched her friend Desma try and be both a single parent and a good member of the Guard, and she feels Desma cannot do those two roles, that those two roles are in conflict. And so Michelle's point of view is women don't belong in combat. They should prioritize being mothers over being soldiers, and society should prioritize parenting over war. So that's Michelle's point of view. Desma doesn't agree with her at all. And Desma says, I'm proud of the deployments I did. I just wanted better training so that I would have identified that roadside bomb and not hit the bomb. And then you see Debbie think with regret, oh, I'm so sad that this change is happening when I'm so much older and I can't take advantage of
it. Wow. You know? Well, Helen, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And good luck with the book.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
The book is Soldier Girls, The Battles with Three Women at Home and at War. The author is Helen Thorpe. This is The Exchange on NHPR.